Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 352 of the podcast. Unless you happen to be joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, if you want to catch the show live, make sure you subscribe to one or all of those platforms. Turn on your notifications so you know when the show is live, like right now. Today is Sunday, March 10th, one day removed from UFC 299 Miami, Florida. And I am broadcasting to you from Gainesville, Florida right now. Currently on a bit of a road trip with the family. I'm here in a lovely Residence Inn, I think. Pretty sure. We're in a Residence Inn?
Yeah.
Residence Inn. Love the Residence Inn. Part of the Marriott family. In any case, we're on our way upstate Florida to visit our state capital, Tallahassee. My daughter's on spring break, so take a little vacation, go see some springs and explore some caves and experience nature. It's going to be a good time. Just like this episode of MMA on the Rocks is going to be a good time, and I know that because tonight's opinions are brought to you by Jameson Black Barrel, which is what I'm currently sipping on here. And this is my favorite of the Jameson expressions because it's the closest to bourbon. If you guys don't know this, I'm a fan of bourbon, right? So the Jameson Black Barrel is basically Jameson that's aged in charred barrels. So you get that nice oakiness. It also has like a really perfect chocolatiness to it. It's very subtle. And then there's some banana bread in there. It's like a chocolate chip banana bread. There's kind of some like a nuttiness to it, a tiny bit of spice, like baking spices. But if you've never had this and you like Jameson, the regular Jameson, I highly recommend this one, especially if you're a bourbon drinker that's looking to explore Irish whiskey. Jameson Black Barrel is the way to go. And of course, I'm drinking Irish whiskey this week because we got St. Patrick's Day coming up. So I just recorded a video today, recommendations of five of my favorite Irish whiskeys for each price point. So I'll be posting that this week. Keep an eye out for that one if you're looking for some new and interesting things. Everybody just drinks regular Jameson St. Patrick's Day. So if you're looking to mix it up, I'll have some recommendations. Of course, this Jameson Black Barrel is part of the list. Where does it fall as far as the price point? You got to stay tuned. Subscribe to MMA on the Rocks on Instagram and YouTube, and I'll be dropping those reels this coming week. All right. With all that out of the way, Sláinte. Let's talk about some fights, shall we? UFC 299, I don't know if it was the card or the energy or the fights, but I just felt like this was one of the best pay-per-views in a long time. I mean, the fights delivered. The action was great. It was a night of comebacks, right? We saw multiple fights where guys were down on the scorecards and had to fight back. And that was kind of the story of the night. However, that was not the story in the main event. Sean O'Malley batters Marlon Chito Vera for 5 rounds. Now, of course, there were those rumors that Chito had a bad camp, and I don't really buy into any of that. But he did look kind of flat. His footwork did not show up last night. And my wife's just watching some loud YouTube videos or something over there, but we'll get her on the headphones, folks. Don't worry. This is what you have to deal with when you travel with the family and you do a podcast. Like sometimes you gotta just put the family on their devices and their headphones and put them in the background and ignore them for an hour so you can do a podcast and drink whiskey like a responsible partner and parent. So, yeah, where was I? Chito looked a little flat to me last night. And I don't know if that was because he was feeling off or he had an injury or what the case was, or if it was just O'Malley's speed and timing was too much for him. He couldn't get a rhythm going. And I told the guys on Thursday that, you know, the blueprint to beat Cheeto is there because he starts slow. I don't know if he's getting reads or whatever the case, but he tends to take the first round off. Then if he can't find his rhythm, he stays behind. And it seems like he can't catch up sometimes. Sometimes he pulls out some, you know, amazing finishes out of his hat towards the end of the fight, but that wasn't the case last night. But knowing that he could do that, knowing that he has that kind of stopping power, still made it an entertaining fight because Cheeto's never been finished, and O'Malley was throwing everything and the kitchen sink at him, and he couldn't get him out of there. I mean, at one point, he hit him with that knee right up the middle. He said he felt a bone in his face break, which is brutal. I mean, Cheeto is a tough son of a bitch, man. But yeah, pretty much a one-sided victory here for the champ. And I kind of had a feeling it would go this way because there's that belief that you get 30% better when you win a championship, right? So someone who has the confidence that Sean O'Malley has, if you amplify that by putting a championship belt around him, you get the kind of performance that we saw last night in Miami. And I think he fought a smart fight too, because he knows that Cheeto's tough. So he didn't overextend himself trying to finish. So he didn't leave himself open or vulnerable at all throughout that fight. And that stifled Cheeto as well, because he was waiting for a mistake to capitalize on it, and it never came. So O'Malley's the champ. He calls out Topuria at the end of the fight. I forget what he said. Put me on a flight to Spain. I guess he wants to fight Topuria in Spain. Topuria respectfully declined and told him that he has to fight Merab first. So remember that Topuria is also from Georgia, or he is of Georgian heritage. He's from Spain. So Merab's his countryman. He's looking out for his boy. And Merab's been calling for this fight like since he's been in the UFC. This is all he wants. I don't think he even cares about the title as much as just fighting Sean O'Malley. I mean, he's had Sean O'Malley's name in his mouth for years. Years he's wanted this fight. And O'Malley doesn't seem excited for it. Even though Merab has gotten himself some star power now, you know, O'Malley's still a little dismissive of him. I don't know if you guys saw the video of Merab trying to chase him down backstage, which I didn't necessarily agree with. I like Merab. I think he's funny. I think he's an awesome fighter. But, you know, O'Malley just got done fighting five rounds. He's like limping around backstage, and Merab is following him around trying to call him out. I mean, I get it. You gotta seize the opportunity, but you know, give the guy a minute. he just defended his belt 25 hard minutes against a killer with the most finishes in bantamweight history. And I don't know how O'Malley hurt his leg. I don't know if it was one of those leg kicks, but yeah, fun fight. Mark Fellows says Cheeto's head was 30% bigger by the end of it. Yeah, I mean, he's going to have a ton of swelling. I would hate to think he's going to look like the Elephant Man today. He's going to look like Joanna Jędrzejczyk after the fight with Wiley Zhang. Speaking of which, Joanna Jędrzejczyk inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame last night, or it was announced that she's going to be inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. And man, is that ever deserved. Joanna Jędrzejczyk was really the boogie woman of the strawweight division. I think her reign was by far the most exciting time in the women's strawweight division. Like, she was always a fighter that you looked forward to watching. I don't think there's as much anticipation around that division right now. It's in a little bit of a lull, I think. hopefully that'll be revived come UFC 300 when Weili Zhang defends her title against Xianan Yan in April. But yeah, Joanna just had, she just had this magnetic quality about her. It was, you know, you wanted to watch her. You wanted to see the interviews. Even like her accent made her a little scarier, you know? And pair that with the phenomenal striking skills. I mean, she was very well-rounded, but, you know, Muay Thai was her bread and butter. She was the pride of Poland. So very well-deserved Hall of Fame announcement for Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So cheers to you, Joanna. Congratulations. I don't know what they drink in Poland, but we're drinking Irish whiskey here tonight. All right. The co-main event. Could it have gotten any better than this? Dustin Poirier, Benoit St. Denis. This fight was crazy. I mean, Poirier looked a full weight class smaller than Benoit St. Denis in there. And I've seen Dustin Poirier in person. He's not a big guy. Like, I can understand why he spent a lot of his career at featherweight. He does not have a huge frame, right? But Benoit St. Denis does. That dude, it looked like his back was almost twice as wide as Poirier's. And he was just all over Dustin Poirier. He wasn't giving him room to breathe. But we kind of knew that would be the key to victory for Poirier, right? He would have to weather the early storm from this young killer. And if he could do that, the experience would come into play. Benoit St. Denis gets a little wild with the striking. And if you start brawling Dustin Poirier, he's going to pick you apart. So in a lot of the straight boxing exchanges, you know, Poirier wasn't really getting touched. His defense is so good. He sees everything so well. And he counters so well. His precision is amazing. That right hook that put down Benoit St. Denis at the end was picture perfect. That was a textbook hook. He had his weight into it. He turned his hips over. He connected right on the mark and put Benoit out cold. So it seemed like Benoit was gassing a little bit, and that made him swing wild, a little bit more wild. And Poirier just capitalized on it, man. The experience really shined through for Dustin Poirier, and he was fighting like a champion again. But man, if you're a Dustin Poirier fan, you had to be sweating through that first round, seeing him get mauled by this French killer. It wasn't looking good, but you know, if you know Dustin Poirier, you know he can take a big shot and keep coming. So 35 years old, he's right there. You know, he can still make another run. I think a fight with Islam would be interesting, but I can't see it happening. I mean, he's 2-2 in his last four fights. And you can't give him the title shot over Gaethje, especially if Gaethje can get past Max Holloway. You have to do Islam versus Gaethje. And that'll probably be in the summer, like maybe International Fight Week at some point around there. But yeah, if Gaethje loses, you could definitely put Poirier in that spot. I think a lot of people would be more interested in that matchup than they would be in, say, Islam Oliveira too. I think there's definitely more of an appetite for Poirier and Islam, and especially after this performance. However, if Benoit St. Denis can hold Dustin Poirier down for a round, Islam can do it for 25 minutes. So there's that. I mean, let's not forget that Islam is the protege of Khabib, who absolutely mauled Dustin Poirier, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, we saw that Poirier has the power to put anybody to sleep. So Marfello says that Poirier might be the greatest fighter to never win the undisputed title. Legend. Yeah, I mean, it would be hard to argue against that. I think anyone who has won an interim title and not won the undisputed title should be in that conversation. So that definitely qualifies Dustin Poirier. And yeah, his accomplishments in this sport are unreal. I mean, yeah, I'd say he should be in the Hall of Fame for sure when he retires. But what's next for him? I don't know. I know he's definitely in the good graces of Dana White right now. Dana was singing his praises. Hold on, let's hear this pop. Not bad. It's all about the pop when you're uncorking the bottle, right? It sets the tone for what the whiskey's going to be like. For those of you just joining us, sipping on some Jameson Black Barrel here, kind of priming the engine for St. Patrick's Day coming up next week. So, cheers. And this is my daughter forgetting that I'm doing a podcast in the background. UFC debut, Michael Venom Page against Kevin Holland. I was saying leading up to this, I would have been much more excited for this fight like 3 years ago. I feel like we got watered down versions of both of these guys in the buildup and in the fight. I mean, there were moments where MVP was just, I mean, the guy fights like a cartoon character, like he's the Flash or something. He explodes with these quick strikes and then he's gone. I mean, if you heard Kevin Holland in the corner between rounds one and two, he looked like he had seen a ghost. And his coaches were trying to say, like, oh, use this, use the sidekick. And Kevin Holland was like, he's not there. He's just not there. So he tried kind of rushing him and getting him into the clinch. And, you know, Kevin Holland, not the greatest wrestler, but he is pretty big for 170. You know, he's fought at 185 many times. So he was able to muscle MVP in a few spots, but MVP is just so good at getting out of those grappling situations. And it was a weird moment at the beginning of the third round where it looked like Kevin Holland went for a handshake and then MVP knocked him down. And then he immediately apologized for it. That was awkward, but you know, MVP said that he kind of let the brand get in his head a little bit. So, you know, maybe he wasn't able to pull the trigger because he had Kevin Holland hurt a couple of times. But yeah, Kevin Holland was never really in the fight. He had some moments where it was starting to look like he was getting in the fight, but he was never really in there. So, okay, we talked about one comeback. Let's talk about another. Jack Della Maddalena pulls one out of his ass against Gilbert Burns. Gilbert looked phenomenal. He had a little bit of trouble with the boxing of JDM in that first round, but then once he figured out that he could take him down, he was all about that. But Della Maddalena did a great job scrambling, getting back to his feet, staying out of bad positions on the ground. His positional awareness was excellent against a four-time world champion in jiu-jitsu and Gilbert Burns. The fact that he was able to survive those positions, but then he was getting beat up bad. He got beat up bad in the second round. So he lost the first two rounds, comes out in the third round knowing that he's down. And it was not looking good. I mean, Gilbert Burns was, what, 2 minutes away from having this fight in the bag? And Della Maddalena just throws a vicious knee and puts Gilbert Burns out. It was phenomenal. I mean, I thought it was an awesome performance, awesome comeback. And that was kind of the story of the night, was the comebacks. In fact, the next two fights I'm going to talk about involve that comeback story as well. So, yeah, Jack Della Maddalena, man, he showed, I mean, obviously he's not a grappler. He's not going to go out there and submit anybody, but he shows that he can hang in there with elite grapplers, right? He's comfortable in those bad positions and he can work his way out of them. He can get back up. And even if you beat the shit out of him for 2.5 rounds, he can still pull something out of nowhere and knock you out. He has that kind of power, you know. All it took was one slip up from Gilbert Burns and he goes from winning to losing in an instant. It was a bad knockout. But I think Gilbert will be back. I mean, I love Gilbert Burns. I know a lot of people do. How do you not like the guy? I mean, he's so nice. He's such a competitor. The guy's like, you know, he's doing jiu-jitsu tournaments on the weekend. And like, if there's a competition, he's signing up, right? You playing bocce ball next week, Gilbert Burns will be there. He's putting money on the game. So what do we do? Do we do Jack Della Maddalena and Michael Venom Page? Because I think that's a fun fight. Let's just pair those two up. I don't know. I think MVP can get back in there a lot sooner than Jack Della Maddalena. He took a lot of damage from Gilbert Burns, but I mean, let's be real. He was pretty damaged goods coming into that fight. I mean, his nose looks like a clay project that somebody stomped on. So, I mean, his sinuses are in the back of his skull. I don't know if that benefits him at all or not, because like my sinuses on a regular day feel like Jack Della Maddalena's look, because I just have horrible, I've got all kinds of scar tissue and deviated septum and everything going on in here. Luckily it's not too obvious from the outside, but yeah, I wonder if Jack Della Maddalena can breathe through his nose. In any case, the fight I really want is Michael Venom Page and Wonder Boy, but I think Michael Venom Page and Jack Della is a great fight. I think if we can make that happen in the summer at some point, that'd be awesome. But yeah, I mean, doesn't everybody want MVP and Wonder Boy? I mean, this is the matchup that we were talking about for years while they were in different organizations. Wait, by the way, too, did anybody else get the feeling that the broadcasters were subtly shitting on Bellator when they were introducing Michael Venom Page, like when he was coming out? You know, they kept saying things like, oh, well, people can do well in other organizations, but now he's finally fighting at this level. I felt like that was low-key putting Bellator down, which I'm okay with because fuck him, right? Yeah, but yeah, that's the matchup we were all talking about. You know, they kind of have similar styles. Obviously, MVP is a lot quicker, but you know, Wonderboy is good at managing the distance. Now, it could be a great fight. It could be very technical, or it could be both of them like standing on opposite sides of the octagon, like waiting to spring into a fucking spinning twirly gig kick or whatever those karate guys do. I'm not a fan of the spinning techniques. If you haven't guessed, I'm not a big believer in them, but for a select few people, they work. In any case, let me know what you guys want to see. You want to see MVP and Jack Della Maddalena, or do you want to see Wonder Boy and MVP? Or do you want to see Wonder Boy and Jack Della Maddalena? I don't know. Make the matches, right? Because if you guys have a loud enough voice, it tends to come to fruition. All right, another comeback fight. Petr Yan on the verge of a 4-fight losing streak. And it was not a good first round for him against Yadong Song. So Song was doing well. He was mixing up his strikes and the takedowns beautifully. However, I didn't like how he kept feinting the takedowns so drastically. and he was doing them kind of just right in the open. And Peter Yan eventually was getting the timing of that and started counter-striking somewhere in the middle of the second round. Peter Yan started to run away with his fight, but it was not looking good, man. I mean, it was flashbacks of Merab holding him down for three rounds for Peter Yan for a while there. And then, you know, he finally got his bearings. He finally got the timing of Yarong Song and was able to clip him a couple of times. Both of these guys got bloodied up. This was a fantastic fight. The pace was incredible. But I would definitely put this in the category of a comeback win for Peter Yan, because after that first round, it was not looking good. I mean, I was watching the live odds, which is unusual for me because I don't bet a whole lot. I did win a little bit of money on Dustin Poirier because I sprinkled a little on him winning by knockout. That was like a game time decision. But so thanks, Dustin. Probably bought me another bottle of Jameson Black Barrel here, which I'm running low on. So if I run out of gas, then the podcast is over, guys, just so you're aware. We can't do this. We can't do this with nothing in the tank. So Peter Yan breaks that losing streak, gets it done against Song Yadong, who looked phenomenal in the first round. All right, another comeback win. Curtis Blaydes over Gilton Almeida. I was shocked that Gilton Almeida was able to get Curtis Blaydes to the ground as easily as he did, too. Many times in the first round, he double-legged him. He mat returned him. He body lock dragged him. He was bringing this guy down. Curtis Blaydes is an Enjuko All-American wrestler in folk-style wrestling. He's got some of the best wrestling credentials in the history of the heavyweight division. We don't see a whole lot of wrestlers at heavyweight. He was an All-American at 285 pounds. He was a big boy. Still a big boy. Almeida, a year ago, was fighting at light heavyweight. Now he's taking down Derek Lewis. He's taking down Curtis Blaydes. But it cost him, right? So he wasn't able to finish him in the first round, wasn't able to submit him after getting those takedowns, multiple takedowns, dragging him down, dragging him down, dragging him down. Curtis Blaydes stayed composed, which says a lot about Curtis Blaydes because he's not used to getting taken down. He's the one doing the takedowns to other people most of the time. He's a great wrestler, and he adapts it so well to MMA. Which is not an easy task either. You know, it's not 1998 anymore. It's not 2002 anymore where a wrestler can just come in and take down anybody. You know, everybody's got wrestling now. Everybody knows how to defend a takedown. Everybody knows how to cage walk back up to their feet. So Almeida gasses out, gets in on a single leg, holds on to it for too long, and Curtis Blaydes says, fuck it, I'm just going to knock this dude's teeth in. Hammer fists him unconscious. Brutal. Brutal. But another come from behind win, right? It's like the DJ Khaled. And another one. Another one. And another one. Curtis Blaydes looks good. And then he calls out Tom Aspinall. Tom Aspinall says, yes. They got a history. You know, Curtis Blaydes came into Tom Aspinall's home turf and beat him. I mean, granted, it was an injury. I think it was a torn something in the knee, but they've got the history. Aspinall has a belt. Are we going to see the first person ever to defend an interim title? Looks like it's a possibility because Blaydes called for it. Aspinall said yes, so... Screw it. Let's do it, right? All opposed? Nobody? All right. Great. Great. I'm going to kind of cruise through the rest of this for the sake of time here and actually spend time with my family, you know, even though it's 10 o'clock at night, my daughter should be, yeah, she's winding down. I'm getting ready for bed now. So that means I'll be up editing this and, you know, putting all the bells and whistles on it for you folks. You guys got any plans for St. Patrick's Day? How are we celebrating? Let me know. Let me know what you're drinking for St. Patrick's Day as well. Leave some comments, shoot me a DM, post, tag me in pictures, whatever. All right. Macy Barber getting the unanimous decision win over Caitlin Sermonara, formerly Caitlin Chukagian. I don't have a lot on this one, guys. I'll be honest with you. I was kind of in and out watching this one. I was like cleaning the house and cooking dinner and stuff while this one was going on. Mataj Gamrot just ran over Rafael Dos Anjos. And it was sad for me to see because RDA is the same age as me. So for that reason, I'm rooting for him. But Gamrot, what did he get? 12 takedowns or something ridiculous. And RDA, who's, you know, a really high level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, but he's got old school Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which is if I get on top of you, you're fucked. If you get on top of me, I'll hold you here. And that's pretty much what we saw against Mataj Gamrot. So big feather in the cap for Mataj Gamrot. Big setback for RDA. I mean, he's not going to get any closer to a title shot. I don't know. I don't even know what a win would have done for him over Mataj Gamrot, but we'll never know. Kyler Phillips, dominant over Pedro Munhoz. This fight, he was just piecing Pedro Munhoz up. I mean, Pedro, it looked like that Chris Tucker from what's that movie? Which one of y'all kicked me? Shit. What the hell is that movie with Jackie Chan? I'll think of it as soon as I turn this off. I'm sure some of you are like yelling at your computers or at your phones. What the hell is that movie? In any case, Kyler Phillips, best we've ever seen him look. He looked fantastic. So he definitely got the attention of the bantamweight division last night. Felipe Lenz got the best of Ion Cutelaba. Cutelaba is one of these guys that just didn't live up to his potential, I feel like. You know, ever since the fight with Ankalaev that had that wonky ending, he just hasn't been the same. This is a guy who came in, he was ferocious. He was scary. He looked like a killer. He looked like he was going to run through the entire division. Now it's like, oh, this guy again. Felipe Lenz is like the complete opposite. He doesn't look like somebody that would be dangerous. He looks like he would be a barista at Starbucks or something, you know, there with like his hair that looks like a helmet. And he looks like a gentle giant, you know, but this dude is legit. I mean, he's got a crazy ground game, but he was winning this fight on the feet too. Gets away with the unanimous decision. And Michel Pereira just absolutely trucks Mikhail Olejanchik. This one wasn't even close. He just ran him over, got him to the ground, and choked him out. If I remember correctly, Olejanchik didn't even have a chance to tap. He just went to sleep. And Pereira like, totally muscled that rear naked choke, but great performance. And then Robly Despagne with the TKO over Josh Parisian. And I'm going to leave it at that. Real quick, guys, let me talk about Francis Ngannou, Anthony Joshua. I'm going to tell you what I think happened, and then I want to hear your opinions. To me, it looked like Francis took a dive. Now, I don't care. either way. I didn't watch the fight. The highlights I saw, it looked like Francis was getting beat up. And then in that second round or third round, whatever it was, he gets hit with an overhand and he goes down. For me, the tell was as he goes down, it looked like his right leg was going to fold underneath him, and he adjusted it so that he could fall with his legs stretched flat out. If he really got his lights put out that bad, he would not have the wherewithal to stop his leg from bending underneath him. I mean, maybe there's like muscle memory and the body is just adjusting itself, but come on, I find it a little hard to believe. I find it a little hard to believe that he wasn't adjusting his leg so he wouldn't get injured on the way down. So that he wouldn't get injured on the way down and end up like Mirko Krokop when he got knocked out by Gabriel Gonzaga with the head kick. If you don't know what I'm talking about, after you listen to this, go to YouTube and look up that fight or fight pass or whatever the case. It looked like a dive for me. And I don't blame him. I mean, he got $20 million up front just to do the fight. Plus, you know, whatever he got under the table to take a dive. Let me know what you guys saw. I also find it hard to believe that, you know, Tyson Fury couldn't knock Ngannou out over 12 rounds, but Anthony Joshua could do it in two. It's hard to buy. I don't know. And if he did really knock him out, then, you know, I get it. I mean, here's a guy who's doing something for the second time against someone who was a former world champion. So it makes sense. But either way, I don't care. I don't care about boxing anymore. Boxing has scorned me too many times for me to really care that much. But when I watched the knockdown or the knockout for the first time, that was my initial reaction. I watched it back a few times. I watched him unfold the leg out from under him. And it looked fake to me. But when you watch the beginning of the fight, it looked like he was getting hurt. He was getting tagged. So I don't know. We'll see. If he did take a dive, I don't blame him because he got $20 million just to show up. So who knows how much he got under the table to take the fall. Pin me, pay me, as they used to say in the industry. Speaking of UFC Fight Pass, which I just mentioned talking about that Krokop-Gonzaga fight, CFFC happened this weekend in Tampa, Florida, and I've got some personal issues with this organization, but I will choose not to air them here. So let's focus on the positive. My friend of the show, the Southpaw Outlaw Serena De Jesus, wins by knockout at CFFC. A beautiful liver kick into a hook. No disrespect to her opponent, but I do not recall her name. And at the end of this fight, she may not have recalled her name either. But if you have a chance to see this fight, which I don't know how you could because CFFC decided not to air their prelims anywhere. The main card was on UFC Fight Pass, but, you know, even though they had cameras and equipment there, they did not choose to air the prelims anywhere, like not on YouTube or stream it to Facebook. Seems like a pretty simple thing to do, but they chose not to do it. In any case, shout out to Serena De Jesus, the Southpaw Outlaw. Follow her at Serena Southpaw on social media. She is one of my absolute favorite guests I've ever had in the 7+ years history of this podcast. So I was very happy for her. And I'm gonna share this story with you guys. I sent her a message congratulating her on the win, and she texted me back a picture of her opponent on the ground, and she said, "Happy International Women's Day, LOL." So that just gives you an idea about the character of Serena De Jesus, which is why I adore her so much. She gives gold every time she comes on this podcast. If you check out the highlight playlist on YouTube, you will see Serena's face. Her clip of her talking about women cutting weight on their periods is anytime somebody asks me my favorite moments on the podcast, I will always bring that up. So big congratulations to her. And then my buddy Matt Allison was on the wrong end of an early stoppage. And so he goes 1-1 as a professional, but I know that guy will be back. I've known Matt since he was a young blue belt, and now he's a professional MMA fighter, a brown belt, jiu-jitsu, great striker. So I know he's going to bounce back from this one. Knowing him, he's back in the gym now, training. But that was that. All right, so the hits keep on coming. UFC Fight Night 239, back at the UFC Apex, and that small cage at the Apex is going to be very full looking, as Tai Tuivasa and Marcin Tybura get in there for the main event. That's a whole lot of dude to be fitting in that giant cage, but that's a fun fight. Obviously, Tuivasa is the brawler. Marcin Tybura is the technician. So we're going to see who's able to get it done there. Co-main event, Brian Battle and Ange Lusa. Here's an interesting fight. Ovince St. Preux and Kennedy and Zechiku. That's a fun one. I'm a big fan of Kennedy and Zechiku. If you know his story, it's hard not to be a fan of him. And he's a great fighter. However, Ovince St. Preux, when he's on, he's one of the most dangerous men on the planet. He's got about twice the experiences in Zechiku, a little bit more, actually. So that's a fun fight. Pani Kianzad and Macy Chiasson. That's an interesting fight. Gerald Meerschaert and Brian Barberena. So Brian Barberena moving up to middleweight, I guess. So that'll be interesting to see how he looks there. Brian Barberena is moving up to middleweight, right? Am I wrong about that one? Yes. He's been at welterweight. Okay. 3 losses in a row. So I guess he's deciding to move up. That's an interesting fight. I like that. All right. And then I don't know a whole lot of the rest of the people on this, but we'll do a deeper dive on this later in the week on Picks and Pours. I don't know when that episode will be happening, because like I said, I'm on the road. I will be in Tallahassee, so I'll have to coordinate with Matt the Mechanic, who I know is probably listening to this, and maybe this is how he's finding out that we're going to have to coordinate later in the week, but it'll come together. We'll get an episode out to you guys. If not on Thursday, then we'll do it another day, but we'll get it your way. In any case, if you miss us, you can get some merchandise. Reaper1.co is the website. Promo code MMAROCKS10. That's MMAROCKS10. Save yourself 10% on an over-the-top, under-the-influence t-shirt, tank top, or hoodie. Full disclosure, any money I make off of merchandise will be spent on alcohol. So if you want to have that on your conscience, please buy some merchandise. If you don't, then you know, go onto their website anyway and support a local fighter, buy their t-shirt. They probably won't spend the money on booze. They'll probably spend it on nutritious food for their fight camp, et cetera, et cetera. In any case, $299 was awesome. I loved it. I'm pretty deadpan when I watch the fights. I jumped out of my seat when Dustin Poirier knocked out Benoit Saint-Denis. That was phenomenal. What a show. What a show. Almost as good as this show. Am I right? I hope everybody has a happy and safe St. Patrick's Day. If I don't see you later on this week, let me know what you're sipping on. And until next time, cheers, everybody. Bye.